You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
One by one, three men come into a bus terminal, settle themselves on a bench, and slowly begin to share their lives with us. That's the basic premise of Conn McPherson's play Port Authority, which is in a limited run through June 15th at the Atlantic Theatre Company. And I'm very pleased that it has brought two of the trio, Brian Darcy James and Jim Norton, back to the show today, along with director Henry Wishkamper. Welcome.
Thank you.
The play is basically a series of three interwoven monologues. Since actors tend to rely on interaction, was that something difficult to deal with, Jim?
Yes, it's quite a discipline to be on stage with two other actors and not interact with them.
Make believe they're invisible. Almost.
Well, quite, yes, because we aren't aware of the fact that the other two people are on stage. And in order to help this situation, Henry rehearsed us all separately. So we actually rehearsed alone. We didn't have any interaction or any chats during rehearsal. So that kind of helps the process.
Well, it is kind of like a Shakespearean monologue, except that you then don't return to interaction. And Henry, you decided to have them do it separately because of that. But what did you tell them to do when they weren't speaking?
Well, when they're not speaking, the idea is principally that they're getting themselves ready to say whatever it is that they feel like they need to say next.
So you don't want them to listen to the other monologues?
Periodically, they do hear certain just snatches of the other guy's conversations that resonate particularly for their character in one way or another, but it's sort of as if it had penetrated through the ether to them and just takes them out of their own reverie for a second, and then they go back to whatever it is that they're working on or thinking about.
Now, Brian, do you think about who you're talking to? Or are you talking to – do you pick somebody in the audience? Or can you even see someone
audience? You can see quite well since you're – it's a small, very beautiful, intimate space. So you can see at least the first three rows if you so choose to, you know, and ultimately you do engage with them because that's your job. But on a higher level, thematically, when asked what this play was about, Connor is quoted as saying it's about three guys called by God to tell the truth. So in a sense, there's a realm that's happening where you're basically trying to convince some higher power if this is the conceit that your truth is indeed your truth, and then the other level, the more tangible level, is actually convincing the people that are listening to you that this story is actually happening in real time for them.
Well, people can interpret all sorts of different things, and speaking to people about the play, I have heard everything from three stages of regret, three stages of modern Irish history, because they represent the pre-boom, the boom, and then the post-boom, if we want to think of it that way. Then it's three people confessing to God, I guess. You can go on and on and on,
yeah,
because
sure.
It isn't. And then the review in The New Yorker saw it all about people who are connected through family links. I'm not sure you thought of any of those things. Do you have to?
Not really. No, it's a play about love. It's a play about what happens to people when they fall in love, the decisions they make and the consequences of those decisions. And the great thing about Connor is, even though this play is three Irish guys, three fellows from Dublin talking about their lives, he writes so wonderfully, and he writes with a universality that reaches out to everybody and includes everybody, so people can recognize themselves in the stories that we're telling.
Well, you've all done things connected to Conn McPherson in the past. Is he a special kind of playwright? I mean, is he somebody you can specialize in the way some people specialize in Beckett?
I wouldn't deign to say that I could specialize in this. But what I will say is that I've always had a very chemical reaction to hearing his words. I remember seeing Jim in The Weir. It was my introduction to Conn McPherson on Broadway, and something about that play just spoke to me not only in my brain but in my body. And you know, subsequent experiences like The Good Thief, which I was lucky enough to be in, another play called This Lime Tree Bower, which shares the same similar structure as Port Authority. There's just something about individuals and artists that sometimes just chemically go together, and that's the way I feel about his writing.
Well, Jim comes by the accent naturally, but you have to do it. Is it in the words?
Certainly there's a rhythm that if you've had time to spend in Ireland or whatever culture that it is you're asked to assimilate or replicate, I find in his writing there's a distinct rhythm that is synonymous with Ireland and these Irish characters, yes.
Henry, how did the casting come about? Jim originated the part in London in 2001, but the third actor in this was in Spring Awakening until recently, wasn't he?
Yeah, yes, he was. He was one of the original cast members, and he was terrific in that show. We actually scheduled the show for this time in the hopes that Jim would be done with The Seafarer and that we could cast him. And luckily, from our standpoint, the show closed just in time for him to join us, and that's worked out terrifically.
Unfortunately, because The Seafarer was one of the most amazing productions.
An extraordinary experience, but it was like an athletic event every night. So doing this play, Port Authority, is a much more gentle experience.
And what was it like returning to this after 7 years?
It was wonderful. I loved it.
Did you have to rehearse it again?
Oh, yeah. I had to learn it all over again. I went right back to the drawing board and pretended I hadn't done it before, but it does come back into your subconscious.
Were you rehearsing it while you were still in The Seafarer?
No, I was reading it. Every night in my dressing room, I'd read one of the monologues before I went on stage. It did lead to some confusion in my mind as to which play I was in.
Has this play been performed before in the United States?
It has not.
So, which seems odd to me. Is it because we're finally realizing that we should look at everything that Conor McPherson has done?
I think there's been interest in it all along. I think that this play lives very close to Connor's heart, and I think for a while he wasn't ready to have it here, and I think he wanted to know the people who were working on it, and so I think it was just a series of events in his own life that led him to be ready to have it be done here.
You did run it in Westchester and Pleasantville, didn't you?
We did.
Was it this group?
It was a sneak preview. It was an open invited rehearsal, and it was Brian and John Gallagher, but not Jim. And we did it without any set and without any lights about 2 weeks into the rehearsal process just to get a taste of what it's like to perform in front of an audience.
What's it like doing long monologues? Now, we should point out that the monologues are interwoven and we're picking up each one of the stories, but still, when you're doing a monologue, you have to make it sound like you're speaking in a very conversational way, and yet there's something unnatural about it.
Yeah, except that when you do a monologue, I mean, my approach to it is that I when I step out there as the character I play, as Joe, I don't assume that I'm going to speak for 5 minutes. I'm going to say a few sentences, and then slowly that becomes like a necklace where you add another sentence at the end of it. You've been speaking for maybe 7.5 minutes. Also, the whole premise of the play is that, I mean, Connor said way back that you're out there, you have to tell the truth, and you cannot leave the stage until you've told the truth. And of course, naturally, these men don't want to talk about their vulnerability because it's too painful. So they're like fish on the end of a hook. They squirm and wriggle and try to tell stories and try and endear themselves to the audience, but they know that they have to, in the end, tell exactly what happened.
Because all three of them have gone through these these experiences that they regret. And in the case of your character, Brian, a man who is can only be described as an annoying loser.
Is that the only way we can describe him?
More complex than that.
Yeah, but no, but
that's pretty right.
How would you describe him?
No, an annoying and a loser are great words.
Although you don't, you can't play him as an annoying loser.
No, that's exactly right. That's the age old rule. The character never really sees their flaws, and a monologue is a great opportunity for in this particular character to just spout at the mouth. And all of his weaknesses and potholes become evident purely by just getting the better of him when he opens his mouth. He just can't help himself, because he's innately cumbersome, and B, I think probably once he gets a whiff of that, he will probably just add fuel to his own fire by acknowledging it suchly. So it's a great character to play because he's just careening off of the walls.
He actually gives us a fourth character, his wife, who we feel we know rather well, even though she's not in the play.
Well, I would argue that all of the characters that are attached to or related to the other characters. Jim's character Joe and Kevin, John's character, are just as present as my wife Mary, although you never see them. We've joked about having, when the lights come up at the end, have a parade of all of the characters that you've heard about, kind of having their bow as well, and there'd probably be about 40, 45, 50 characters that could come out and everyone would know exactly who they were.
Yes, Connor's plays are full of people who don't appear on stage, and a lot of them are women. Women play a very important part in Connor's plays, even though they rarely appear on stage.
My guests are Jim Norton, who plays Joe, and Brian D'Arcy James, who plays Dermot, in the new production of Port Authority at the Atlantic Theater Company at 336 West 20th Street. Also with us is the director of this production, Henry Wishkamper. And I mentioned earlier that it's in a limited run through, what did I say, the 15th? That's been extended, hasn't it?
Yeah, we're now
June 22nd.
22nd of June.
The night I went, it was sold out.
Yeah, well, it's only the 22nd of June because Brian is leaving to become a Broadway star.
You're going to be going into the Broadway version of Shrek?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, it's a strange situation to be plopped into this amazing play and know that I'll be leaving to go be an ogre, which is a wonderful thing about being an actor, but this is such a lovely experience, and it's so rich for me as an actor doing Connor's play that it'll be hard to say goodbye to it.
Well, you've been in a number of musicals. You've been in Titanic, Carousel, Sweet Smell of Success. There's a lot of talk about rock music in this play. Do you wish that Connor McPherson had written a song or two for you as well?
Oh, boy. I just learned that he is a musician.
Yes, he does. He plays very good guitar, and he also composes.
I didn't know that. So the answer is yes.
Well, this is not the first time you've performed as an Irish accent. We mentioned that you'd been in The Good Thief, but you also were in Martin McDonagh's The Lieutenant of Inishmore.
That's correct. And also a play by Kenneth Branagh at the Irish Arts Center called Public Enemy, which is my first jump into the Irish pool of bad Americans trying to do good Irish accents.
Well, working with John Gallagher and Brian, I mean, these are two perfect Dublin accents. They're absolutely wonderful. And we have to say a big thanks to Stephen Gavis, our dialect coach, who did a great job.
Indeed.
Well, I was wondering, because of the musicality of the Irish accent, whether being a singer actually helped.
I think so. I think if you have that at your disposal and you're trained in that and your ear has become accustomed to finding, the rhythms in things, I think that helps for sure. I was lucky enough to do The Good Thief in Ireland and Waterford and Public Enemy, the play I just talked about, in Dublin. So I've had experiences pretending to be an Irishman in front of the Irish, which is harrowing.
And getting away with it.
Away with it, yeah, thankfully, for the most part.
There's another aspect of Conor McPherson's writing. I don't know whether he actually puts it in the play, but there are silences. Are they written into the script?
The script is actually, it's the only script I've ever read that has no stage directions whatsoever. There's a number before each monologue, and then there's the words that the characters speak. And so there are spaces between the monologues themselves, it's not like Beckett or Pinter where pauses are a part of the actual language of the script.
So this is something that you just have added because they made sense. And they do. They're used to great effect.
Yeah, and also Connor has this great theory. It's a well-known theory that a pause has to be earned. You can't just stop. There has to be a huge amount of emotional energy in a sentence or in a couple of lines before you've earned the right to pause.
Does it change over the course of a run?
The basic structure, I think, remains pretty intact, what Henry has devised and what we've come up with, mostly rhythm-wise. I would say the most variance occurs within shades of our performance depending on what the audience does. And every night it is wildly different just in terms of the temperature of the reaction, the communal way they decide to participate or not. That, of course, we're highly tuned to what it is that we're receiving, because they're essentially our acting partner. So that's the biggest degree of variation.
But yes, British, they're the, like the fourth character in the play, the audience are.
And British actors tell me that American, or at least New York audiences, are quite different than the ones back home. They're much more responsive.
They're very warm, very responsive, very uninhibited. They're great. They really are. Exactly.
And they love the standing ovations at the end of every performance.
Yes, yeah.
Now they seem to be de rigueur, don't they? I mean, even bad plays get standing ovations, but in this case, it's well deserved.
Or maybe they've been sitting for so long they want to get up.
No intermission will do that.
So we know that Brian is going into Shrek the Musical. What's in store for you?
I'm going to go back and to London and see my kids, see my grandkids, because I've been away since September and they're wondering where I am. And then I'm going to...
You could always move here, Jim.
Well, I practically have, yeah. And then I'm going to record Finnegan's Wake, which is not something I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I'm sure that if someone who really understands what the sounds of the words should be will make it a lot clearer to someone like me who never got past page two.
That's the hope.
And Henry?
I'm essentially going out on paternity leave.
You're going on maternity leave?
Paternity leave.
Really? You have a new child?
Coming shortly.
Uh-huh.
So that's your next big production.
That's my next big production. Yeah. So.
Well, that's fabulous. Meanwhile, we have this until the 22nd, and you've added some additional performances, I gather, because the play has been such a success. I have to tell you, it's emotional. You'd never think three monologues would be so emotionally devastating, but the play is just so powerful. Yeah, well, maybe it's also because the performers are also wonderful.
Well, he's an extraordinary writer. I mean, one critic back in London a while ago described him as an Irish recording angel, and I think that's what he is.
Well, how old was he when he wrote this?
At 27, 28.
Mm-hmm.
How can someone so young know so much about the human heart? It's extraordinary.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. Jim Norton, back again. After he's been here for two Conor McPherson plays, as has Brian Darcy James, in fact. They're both appearing in Port Authority at the Atlantic Theater Company, which is in a wonderful little theater. At 336 West 20th Street. And you can find out more information about tickets and such on our show page at WNYC. Its director is Henry Wishcamper. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you,
Leonard.
Thanks.